welcome to University Matters on Campus FM. I'm Patricia Camilleri. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research, their international networks, their aims and plans for the future. I shall also be hearing from staff and students about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. This is the programme that keeps you informed about what's happening on campus. I'm very happy to have with me in the studio today Professor Carmel Vassallo. Professor Vassallo is head of the Department of Spanish and Latin American Studies here at the university. He's also coordinator of the Mediterranean Maritime History Network. And that is going to be the main subject of our chat today. Welcome, Professor Vassallo.
Thank you very much for having me on again.
As I said, we're going to talk about the Fourth Mediterranean Maritime History Network Conference. Bit of a mouthful.
It is a bit.
It's not happening until 2014. That's May 7th, 8th, 9th in Barcelona. However, you've already, I hear, received a bumper crop of applications, submissions to give papers at your conference, and I'm sure they cover a very wide range of
remarkably
discussions.
Wide range of topics. Yes. Well, it's as you say, it's 150 plus now. I think the last time I checked, which was the day before yesterday, it's 155 and counting. But it's still early, of course. I mean, due date has the time has come and gone, but I like to start organizing these things early because inevitably there's always complications towards the end. So the earlier you try and sort everything out, the better. Particularly with a view to organizing a suitable program. Well, it's as you said, it's a vast range. The title of our little association or band of brothers, you might say, is quite a mouthful, but it more or less really centers the person, you know, who reads it quite clearly as to what this is about, which is Mediterranean history, and it's about maritime history specifically. But it's not maritime history as conceived by a lot of traditional kind of maritime historians. It's infinitely wider, typically here, especially on this island of ours, but many other places besides. There's much emphasis on naval history, you know, the history of navies, war, and such like. But considerably more broadly based, and the question of the use of the sea for power projection, as it is known nowadays, in other words, for military purposes and for other such purposes, is but one of several, you know, such as the use of the resources of the sea. And the clearest, obviously, is fishing, but there's many other things as well. Or especially nowadays, you read about in the news about all this oil being found offshore as well. It's you could say that in a way is resources of the sea, but of the land, but under sea. So keeping in mind that the sea, after all, occupies infinitely larger proportion of the Earth's surface than the Earth itself does. So it's some people have referred to it as the great unexplored inner space rather than outer space. So there is much there, but obviously the sea as a means of communication. A lot of people think that, you know, planes and such like. Obviously most people move by plane from one place to the other nowadays. But the bulk, the overwhelming bulk, well over 95% of the Earth's commerce of trade is actually still carried by ship.
You only have to look at the free ports in the Mediterranean.
Exactly,
to see
and
that.
And specifically the Mediterranean actually accounts for a huge proportion of all the amount of traffic on the Mediterranean is amazing. If you take things in context, in fact, it's amazing that not more disasters happen, seeing that there are so many ships out there going to and fro. Then there's the sea as a medium for power projection, as we said, but also the sea for scientific purposes, oceanography and climatology and such like. And obviously, nowadays, perhaps most important and uppermost in people's mind is the use of the sea as a place for leisure. because we've always had a somewhat conflictive kind of attitude towards the sea. As you know, after the Romans were very open about the sea, probably had to do with the fact that as far as the Mediterranean was concerned, it was the Mare Nostrum. They controlled all of it after the initial kind of sorting out of all the pirates they had in the earlier period. But then once kind of peace and proper patrolling was established, the sea was like a lake for the Roman Empire. But
you don't think of leisure activity in a way when you think of the medieval period, for example.
No,
you can't imagine that.
This is exactly it. After the Roman epoch, in fact, partly, I think, substantially influenced by the church's attitude as well, the body and such like, but also because, of course, the Mediterranean got infinitely less secure, and most people sort of shied away from settling on the coast and moved inland. So only fortified places like the three cities and so on would actually have a community living cheek by jowl by the sea. Most other places, as you know from our own history, were away from the coast, substantially away from the coast. So basically, people turned their back a bit in the Mediterranean on the sea. And it was fairly recently that it was rediscovered in many ways, as you yourself know. It was only the advent of the British, basically, which made people sort of rush once again towards the coast and new towns.
The Grand Tour, perhaps?
New town. Well, the Grand Tour, yes and no.
Might have helped a bit.
I'm not sure about the Grand Tour so much. I think it was more a question of economic opportunities. For example, I'm a Slima boy myself, and Slima came into existence practically directly as a consequence of the Brits. I have a house still in what is now Manwaldenbeck, but used to be Prince of Wales, on what used to be the main road leading to what was the focal point of attraction, which was the barracks at St. Andrews. A huge number of people created all sort of opportunities. Huge numbers of people migrated from the Bukhara area particularly and set themselves up in the inner part of Slema to service the St. Andrews and to service an increasing number of English people who were in Malta and liked the kind of the fresh air of those lovely houses we used to have on the front. We used to have on the front,
we'll,
as you know. And obviously the bathing. But it's not just the Maltese, of course. Keep in mind that this kind of attitude, this negative perception of the sea, is something which is much ingrained. It's Muslims have it, Jews have it, we have had it as well.
Healthy respect, perhaps.
Yes and no. I think that after all, for many hundreds of years, even in times of the knights, we drew most of our kind of jobs and stuff were on the harbor area, but such things as swimming, for example. Keep in mind that a lot of sailors until not a long time ago couldn't swim. You know,
well, they were told not to learn.
Yes,
so they
that'd be easier
drown
for them
immediately.
Just to drown them. Yes, exactly. So. For example, even in a place which is so indelibly lodged in people's mind as associated with sort of like the beach culture as Australia, you may know that until the beginning of the 20th century, in fact, it was in the early part of the 20th century, it was illegal still to bathe. You had to do it at night, after dark. Imagine that nowadays.
Gosh.
With all those kind of lifesavers trampling about, you know, and surfies and stuff. So the sea has been rediscovered, you might say, to sum it all up. We have rediscovered it not just as a source of employment. You know, all the people who come here, tourism, really come because of the sea and the beach to some extent. And imagine all the hotels sort of located by the sea. They're there for the sea. They wouldn't be, they're not attracted to sort of having you staying in a hotel in Ormi, for example. If you know what I mean. But also Maltese themselves, you know, they like pottering about in boats, and my brother is a great enthusiast. He spends all his life down in Slema, where all these kind of little boats are, and they just talk about the one that got away, you know, that sort of stuff. People like the sea.
And there's
plenty of
big boats as well around at the moment.
Well, there's some very expensive ones, yes. But also just, even if it's not actually pottering about in boats, even just going for the passeggiata, you know, just strolling by the sea, especially in the heat of the summer when you have a little bit of a breeze, it's being rediscovered, I would say. So maritime history is really, really very, very, very broad. Then, of course, there's the question of the sea as an inspiration and culture and ideology as well. The way we write about it. A lot of people actually overestimate how, because actually when you look at the literature, for example, Duncarme, he doesn't talk about the sea much, you know. People tended to get their inspiration mostly from the village core, away from the coast, really, because the coast often represented sort of like semi-naked bodies, temptation and stuff like that. That's where all the English girls were to be found, driving Maltese lads crazy type of thing.
And forbidden fruits. Going back to the conference just directly for a moment, the universities involved, the people who are in this group,
yes,
that you're in.
Well,
which universities are really interested in discussing the Mediterranean?
All this arose basically about 10 years ago. We were in this, the Third International Congress of Maritime History, a much more broader, worldwide phenomena in Esbjerg in Denmark. And we couldn't help noticing, really, how underrepresented the Mediterranean was. And we felt that the Mediterranean needed more of a voice. And it struck me that as English speakers and as a consequence able to reach out perhaps beyond the Mediterranean, we were in a good position to be kind of lead actors in this one. But it would have been impossible had I not had the very close cooperation over these last 10 years of some very important people in terms of, I mean, we had this Professor Michela D'Angelo from the University of Messina. We had a wonderful, wonderful conference there. If you sort of look and go into the website and you see some people who not just obviously spouting forth about the maritime history, but also enjoying the hospitality we had over there. But obviously the very first one was in Malta. It was in Malta by default, believe it or not, because I was intent on trying to take it to the Maghreb to permit Arab scholars to attend. But there were political problems because they would not allow Israeli scholars to attend as well. So I answered them that I very much regretted that we had to not accept the hospitality that time around until things were suitably kind of more open for academics to meet, for all academics to meet, rather than discriminating against them. So it happened in Malta.
That was
back in 2002. Mm-hmm. Just about 30 kind of papers. And this, you know, hasn't really looked back.
Turkey, I think.
Yes, then we went to Messina and Taormina, and subsequently we went to Izmir in Turkey. Now we're going to go to swing to the other side of the Med. We're going to go to Barcelona, which is this one we're talking about, and then the proposal that I'm backing is for us to go to the Black Sea, to Romania.
Mamaia or Costanza, somewhere.
Yes,
on the edge of the Black Sea.
Exactly. That's where we're going, in fact.
And in fact, I was going to ask you a question about the southern littoral of the Mediterranean, to see how much they could be involved. I mean, these last couple of years, it's been rather difficult.
I have, even before the last couple of years, even before the Arab Spring or summer or winter or whatever you want to call it, it was difficult. When we had the conference in Malta, I in fact funded the attendance here by three individuals from Tunisia. Abdelhamid Fehri in particular was a very close friend who has hosted us many a time in his beloved Kerkana, and another couple of people, in order to permit a presence. But it's not really their thing. It's partly to do with, which is, partly understandable, and yet not, because Islam and Arabs have, had a considerable presence and moving and commerce and trade. That is how Islam has extended a lot of the time over parts of Africa and parts of Asia, borne by Arab traders out to conquer markets. So they have a maritime tradition of sorts, but it doesn't loom very, very importantly in their panorama, let's put it this way.
What about the northern ones? I noticed that there's in one of your previous conferences, there was something about Saxons, Anglo-Saxons, and the Mediterranean.
But actually, Anglo-Saxons, that was a publication that arose out of a session that I organized jointly with Michela, in which it was mostly based on the session, but then we invited some people to contribute as well. That was just one session. As you know, conferences typically are based on sessions, sometimes running as plenaries and sometimes running as parallel sessions, typically focusing on specific aspects or specific... I like the plenary format myself. Regrettably, it's not going to be possible this time around, even though we're going to extend into Saturday, because there's just so many. So we're going to have parallel sessions, regrettably. So that's going to be a bit of a headache, how you organize everything so that everybody gets a fair kind of go. Anglo-Saxons in the Mediterranean was, as I said, came out of one of the sessions, but we had some very interesting papers in there. But we have had a number of other things. I, together with a Greek colleague who has also been one of the most important contributors, she is at the University of Corfu, the Ionian University, to be more exact, in Corfu. Gelina Herlaftis, she's extremely influential in the field of maritime history at worldwide level and so on. We have worked very closely together. She has really contributed a lot. For example, she's organized three sessions for this forthcoming one. Obviously, the Greeks are the Greeks. I mean, Greek maritime history has been very, very important.
Second to none,
really. Yes, probably, yes. She has written so extensively. But together with her, I produced, not for the Mediterranean Maritime History Network, but for a publication called Research in Maritime History. That's a Canada-based. And it was, in fact, a review of the historiography of maritime history. I don't think it appears on our website. In fact, that's an oversight. No, Research in Maritime History, number 28, in fact, it is. New Directions was entitled, subheaded, New Directions in Maritime History. And we looked at the bibliography of maritime history in the various countries, Spain, France, Italy, Malta, Slovenia, Greece, Turkey, Israel, and so on. The French are always a little bit reticent. I try to involve them from the very beginning, but the fact that we do more, our working language is English, which is our strong selling point, incidentally, because one of the selling points of the conference and having it hosted by the University of Malta is that we can then showcase some of the best papers, as we have done already after each conference, in our Journal of Mediterranean Studies, which
sort of a wonderful venue for them.
Exactly. It enables people sort of from well beyond the Mediterranean to see what's happening with people, which means a lot of copy editing on my part, but still. But it's a service you're giving, which people appreciate.
It's there for the record as well.
Yes, of course, as you know. Conferences come and go, but at the end of the day, what's left is a publication.
France, perhaps for its own reasons, might want to take part, but I presume that
They do. No, but they, for example, we have a good number this time around. But in fact, I saw that some of the publications which have emerged in France, for example, actually emerged as a reaction to this publication, this Research in Maritime History.
Because, that's good.
Yes, it was. Yes, I mean, it was kind of like satisfying to see that this tiny mite over here somehow is pricking them a little bit, and they got resources. That they dedicate a lot of resources to these cultural sort of things. But I think this is all good, healthy competition type of thing. You stimulate others to do things by doing things yourself, and vice versa.
And do you find there are academics from, say, British universities that take an interest at all in the Mediterranean?
Of course. There's a huge number. I mean, I told you about the number, I think, at some stage you mentioned, but it was, we've got about 155 proposals already. And this is from, about 30 different countries. We do, in fact, incidentally, have from Algeria, from Tunisia, from Morocco, but we have from Croatia. We have 9 papers coming from Croatia. France is contributing about a dozen. There's Greece itself. Italy, of course, is always a major player in this with 16 papers. We've got a session from Malta, incidentally. We already had a special session chaired by Professor Henry Frendo on Malta in Izmir. But then obviously Spain looms very, 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 very importantly because it is after all. But we've got from the United Kingdom, we've got about 8 coming from the United Kingdom, we've got about 5 from the United States. So it's a good selection. We've got 4 from Israel. So it's a good selection of people. But we've also got some, how can I put it, some unexpected ones in the sense of a lot of people forget the Black Sea. Yeah, the Black Sea is kind of like an inner lake of the Mediterranean. And that means that we have people from Georgia this time. We have people from Romania. We have people from the Ukraine and from Russia. So the Mediterranean has always attracted a lot of people from all over the place. And I think it's...
That deepens the richness and the
interest. In fact, that is the reason why we will be having I'm proposing that we have the next conference in Romania, because it opens up a new world. A lot of people actually don't know a lot about Central Europe and that part of the world. We've always lived with our back to it.
And in recent years, it's ended up as rather... has a negative.
It had a negative connotation already before, because of the political divide. But some of the things there is pretty awful. I mean, the other day I was reading an article about life expectancy. I mean, just the bottom's dropped. I mean, Russia's the average life expectancy of a Russian male, for example, has dropped about 10 years since the end of the Cold War.
Since this conference is going to be in Barcelona, and my only experience, but wonderful experience, of Spain is Barcelona, perhaps we can talk a little bit about the venue for the conference city itself.
Well, Barcelona, first of all, as a lot of people will tell you, is not Spain. Barcelona is Catalan. They're very proud of it. They speak a different language. I did my doctorate at the University of Malta. It's like a, for me, I'm kind of, you know, it's like a circle. I'm coming back to where I started off in many ways after 25 years. Going back to Barcelona where I did my PhD. And I was so surprised when I arrived there and found that I had to do thought courses for my doctorate in medieval Catalan, and I didn't know, I'd never even been in contact really with it. So it was quite a struggle. It's a different country. Some of them are actually angling to be independent. But more importantly, of course, Barcelona is a very ancient city and always a very important city on the Mediterranean. I was telling you that the venue will be, the Maritime Museum of Barcelona, which is unique, which is really amazing. It's the old Tarsena, it's the old shipbuilding facility. Many of the galleys we used to get would be normally built there and then shipped out here for finishing. It's a huge, they are huge buildings covered kind of, just covered spaces. In the smack bang in the center of the city, that's where we will be, and we'll be very well looked after because it's them plus the University of Barcelona itself, so they will lay on quite a good program for us. Obviously the venue itself helps. Barcelona offers a lot.
Such an entertaining city.
It's not my favorite one in the Spanish state, but it does offer an alternative perception of things. I mean, they're very different character-wise. what they enjoy and what. But they're very thorough as well. Catalans tend to be very kind of very business mentality kind of people. You can ordinarily depend upon them to deliver. I think, which I'm seeing from the team who are working on this organization. So I think it should be a lot of fun. We'll obviously have a lot of shindigs on the side as well. Inevitably, that's one of the things.
Why not? That's all part of the networking, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, is that what you call it? Whatever you say.
One
so.
Way of putting it, anyway.
Yes, it is, of course, an important.
Barcelona as a city was really reborn with the Olympics.
It was indeed. It was indeed. But it has much to attract in terms of, you know, museums and stuff. There is much to see, but even as you say, architecturally, Parque Güell, you know, Dalí. I mean, there's so much in the vicinity as well, not just Barcelona itself, but in the vicinity. I used to have house at one stage in to the north in the Ampurdà, what is known as the Masia. Very pretty at this time of the year. In fact, I can recall it, you know, lots of flowers everywhere. Very, very pretty.
Oh, I really fell in love with Barcelona.
You should try and get away from the city itself and go towards the Pyrenees and Girona, particularly. Girona is a lovely city with its old Jewish quarter. There's lots to see.
I know that Gaudí is sort of almost like a bit of a cliche when talking about Barcelona, but I must say I was really overwhelmed by him and the idea that the city had embraced this guy so early on in the 20th century.
Yes, yes. They are like that. They're very creative in that way. They're very kind of innovative, I would say, as well. Very innovative in their. Even for example, you see it even in Malta. There's an increasing penetration of Catalan capital. Mapfre, you know, took over the insurance people, and there's several sort of pharmaceutical companies and stuff. They're very enterprising.
So, I'd just like to repeat that this Mediterranean Maritime History Network conference is happening in Barcelona in 2014, May 2014, and that if anybody wants more information about it, they can approach you, carmel.bassallo at um.edu.mt, and in Bocca al Lupo.
Thank you.
I don't know how to say that in Spanish. I'm sorry.
Suerte.
Thank you so much, Professor
Bassallo. Thank you very much.
Thank you for being with us on University Matters. You can listen to any of the previous interviews in this series on the Campus FM website. I hope you'll join us again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.